I'm Rob Wolf, and welcome to episode number 47 of Unformidable, where we take a look at some of the less heralded Mets in our beloved franchise's quirky history, because to us, every player who dons the orange and blue is, in some way, unformidable. And as I sit down to record this, opening day take two still has not taken place. We met fans at a watch forlornly as 28 other teams started their seasons this past weekend, and we had nothing thanks to the Nationals' COVID outbreak. To me, it was an unfortunate reminder that 2020 is really only behind us as a date. Obviously, there are positive signs sprouting, and opening day is meant to feel positive, but this won't be a 100% normal season, as the smaller crowd size is in any reasonable stadium or state will attest to. Hopefully it's closer to a normal season, though. 2020, in fact, in addition to many negative things, I'll remember as the first year that I did not set foot in the Mets' home stadium since 1982, when my dad refused to return post-strike. It's the only opening day I haven't attended aside from the first game at Citi Field since 1997. In a lot of ways, it felt to me like a season that never happened. It was hard to fully concentrate on baseball with no crowds, strange rules, uncertainty about whether we should be playing organized sports. I did watch some for distraction in surreal things like a Met walk-off home run at Yankee Stadium. But really, 2020 was just bizarre as a season. My friend Rob Ward and I were reminiscing yesterday about how many random Mets took the field last year. I mentioned Brian Dozier, and he was like, yeah, if you didn't throw that name out there, I never would have believed it. And you were joking about future unformidable candidates all around. Dozier, Hunter Strickland. And I actually decided, what the hell, I've never... No sentiment represents the 2020 season better to me than the notion that, I sometimes just look back and think to myself, did that really happen? That whole year? Any of it? Which really to me makes the quintessential 2020 Met, one about whom a great deal of ink was spilled, but one who never actually took an at-bat or appeared as a Met in 2020. Met almost entirely in name only, one whose existence became a bit of a joke to Met fans over the last couple of years, like a Major League Baseball Sasquatch, the apparently really still alive and suddenly magically healthy Mr. Jed Lowrie. That's right, I'm going to go there. I've never done a player still playing in baseball, but I don't know. I just felt like it. Jed Carlson Lowrie was born on April 17th, 1984 in Salem, Oregon. Played ball in North Salem High in Oregon, and then attended Stanford University, where he excelled in baseball, earned Pac-10 Player of the Year honors, and played on a great team with future major leaguers such as Carlos Quentin and Sam Fuld. He was drafted in the first round supplemental draft by the Red Sox in 2005. A lot of big names in that draft. Justin Upton went first overall. Ryan Braun and Troy Tulowitzki went high in the first round before the Mets drafted one Mike Pelfrey. Lowrie's Stanford teammate, another Stanford teammate, and a probable future unformidable candidate, John Mayberry Jr., was drafted 19th overall by the Texas Rangers. The Red Sox had a slew of picks. I guess they were comp picks. Jacoby Ellsbury and Clay Buchholz were both drafted before Ellsbury, and then he, as I said, he was drafted 45th overall, I think, and joined the Sox organization. From 2005 through 2007, Jed Lowrie played for the Red Sox just made his way up through the minors, peaking really in 2007. He made the AA Eastern League All-Star team. Was named the Red Sox Minor League Offensive Player of the Year, and actually after the 07 season cracked both Baseball America and MLB top 100 prospect lists. Not way up there, but I think in the 60-70 range. He wasn't a big home run hitter in the minors, but he already started to display what he would be known for in the majors, for people who got to watch him play in the majors, which was a solid batting eye and extra base power, you know, someone who could spray line drives around the field, get 30, 40 doubles a year, if not, you know, if not a ton of home runs. He started 2008 in AAA, but was called up to make his major league debut pretty quickly in April of 2008, when Mike Lowell went on the DL, the Red Sox everyday third baseman at the time. So though he was a shortstop, he was plugged in at third. In his major league debut, I think it was April 15th of 2008, he went 1-for-4 with 3 RBIs in his debut, grounding a single off of reliever Rafael Perez of Cleveland to drive in 2 runs with his first major league hit, and actually put the Red Sox ahead 3-2 in a game they'd ultimately win 5-3. He played pretty regularly at third with Lowell injured and hit his first career home run on May 10th of 2008 off of Glenn Perkins of the Minnesota Twins. And as a reward for that, Jed Lowrie summarily got sent back down to the minors after that game as Lowell came off the DL. He would return to the big league club later in August, though, when Red Sox shortstop Julio Lugo got hurt, and Lowrie played well enough to split time once Lugo came off the DL with him down the stretch and into the postseason. And in his career, Lowrie actually logged a lot of postseason time between Boston, Houston, and the A's. Had a ton of personal success with his postseason stat line, never advancing beyond the league championship season, which he did in 2008. And he's actually the one who put the Red Sox there. He had his finest, and as far as I could see, only or remember or look up in researching, his only memorable postseason moment was as a rookie when in game 4 of the ALDS against the Angels, Lowrie ground a single between the hole between first and second. Probably wouldn't have been a hit in 2020, might have been shifting on him, but he brought home the one and only Jason Bay with the game-winning run to walk off game 4, a game 4 series. Division Series clinching victory over the then very unfortunately named Los Angeles Angels of Anaheim. Lowrie would then only go 2-for-18 in the following 7-game ALCS loss to the Rays. They're probably the Devil Rays then. I'm trying to remember when that name change took place, but the ending the Sox dreams of repeating as World Series champions as the Rays went on to the World Series, and we won't discuss who won that World Series. I mean, I guess it's not as bad as the Yankees, but pretty damn close. One other note that I completely forgot. The Red Sox season ended in 2008, but Lowrie had another unforgettable moment in early 2009 before the season started, as Jed Lowrie technically hit the very first home run in a Mets game in Citi Field history. I believe I went to both of those games. I was trying to find stats on them. They were cold and rainy. On April 3rd and 4th, the Mets and Red Sox played exhibition games at Citi Field. I believe the Yankees and Cubs played exhibition games at the new Yankee Stadium. It's cold and unpleasant and rainy. And in the first inning of the second game on April 4th, I think Oliver Perez walked the bases loaded and gave up a grand slam to Jed Lowrie, which, you know, very fitting for what Oliver Perez would do. And yeah. At any rate, I couldn't find box scores to the games, but I don't think there was a home run in the first game. It was a home run in the first inning of the second game. And, you know, basically the reports of the game were just, I'm just going on memory at this point, but you know, everyone just talked about how spacious and cavernous the stadium was and how hard it was going to be to hit home runs. I think Fernando Tatis hit one off of the, you know, what Howie Rose would soon dub the Great Wall of Flushing that, you know, would have been well out of Shea, but not, of course, out of Citi Field. At any rate, that little cameo at Citi Field, which was more notable than any he would make as a New York Met, sadly enough. Jed Lowrie continued on in his major league career with the Red Sox, bouncing between second, third, and short over the next few years, never quite establishing himself as a regular. He had a very good offensive season in 2010, but he missed the beginning of the season with mono, and then he struggled with injuries later in the year. And then after a disappointing 2011 season, he got traded to the Houston Astros in a deal for Mark Melanson. Lowry would then spend the 2012 to 2018 seasons kind of ping-ponging between the Houston Astros and the Oakland A's. He had a solid 2012 with Houston, which then the Oakland A's were interested in him and acquired him in the offseason for a package including Chris Carter and Brad Peacock. And then Lowry had a great 2013 season for Oakland, put up to that point a career-high 119 OPS+. But he struggled in 2014, both offensively and then with a broken finger, and he did struggle with injuries a lot in his career. And I guess he liked Houston because he signed back there for, a four-year contract, probably 4 years, would bring him to the Mets time in the 2014 offseason. He played third and short in Houston in 2015, eventually being supplanted at short when rookie Carlos Correa came up for good. So he was kind of a bench piece for the Astros when the precocious and, to the best of my knowledge, not cheating Houston Astros made the 2015 postseason, and Lowry went 0-for-3 in the postseason that year as the Astros rather unfortunately came up just short in a five-game league division series to the Kansas City Royals that would soon also have negative implications for the Mets. I actually think it was a Correa error in Game 4 that kept Kansas City alive, if I'm remembering. But I digress again. But Correa and Altuve, of course, were then kind of pretty settled in the middle of the infield. Houston had Alex Bregman in the pipeline. So Lowry got traded back to Oakland in the offseason after that year. After a down or mediocre 2016, Lowry really flourished back in Oakland, having the two best seasons of his career in 2017 and 2018 at the ages of 33 and 34, flashing a 120 and 121 OPS+. In 2008, he had a career-high 23 home runs, 99 RBIs, made his first career All-Star appearance, and received down-ballot MVP votes at the age of 34. Also, for the first time in his career, he got any ink on the MVP ballot, so to speak. A quote-unquote professional hitter with positional versatility, Jed Lowry went into the 2018 offseason as an interesting free agent, despite his age of 34, which would perhaps limit the length or dollar amount that he might get on a contract. I always thought him as a fine player, but never in my wildest dreams did I think he might be a player that my favorite team would target that offseason, especially since new general manager for the New York Mets, Brody Van Wagenen, made his signature offseason move earlier in December when he acquired middle infielder Robinson Cano, along with Edwin Diaz, in what is quite the ill-fated trade, so to speak. But after bringing on Cano and Diaz in trade and signing Wilson Ramos to fill a clear void at catcher, the Mets made a surprising acquisition on January 10th, 2019, signing Jed Lowry to a two-year $20 contract. Certainly seemed odd coming on the heels of the other transaction that will probably negatively define the Brody era, that aforementioned trade. Because on the one hand, there seemed to be absolutely no place for Lowry to play. You had Todd Frazier at third, Cano at second, the clearly still underappreciated, according to rumor, almost traded Jeff McNeil also on the roster. And they also recently added J.D. Davis, so there seemed to be a logjam in the infield, not to mention the Mets' unstated but pretty obvious inability to expand the Wilpon-era payroll very far. Wow, 2 years ago, but this seems ages ago to talk about not being able to expand the payroll, Brody Van Wagenen. Seems ancient, and that feels good. But at the other hand, on the other hand, there were a lot of reasons not to bring in Lowry. But then again, I always criticize the Mets for not building depth. And again, Lowry had that positional versatility that was becoming more and more prized in the modern game. He could perhaps even fill in shortstop in a pinch, although obviously, better suited at second and third. But it kind of looked like a clever signing, even with Lowry's age. Heck, at Amazing Avenue, we graded the move as an A. Probably a little more generous than I would have given it at the time, but yeah, I approved of the move. I mean, for every time I like to pat myself on the back for, foreseeing how horrible, I thought the Cano Diaz trade was at the time. I mean, one day after the Jed Lowry signing, the Yankees signed DJ LeMahieu for 2 years and $24 million, and I allowed myself to think, wow, that makes the Lowry signing look even better. I mean, that guy's going to be terrible outside of Coors Field. So, I'd say the moral of the story is, don't hire me as GM. I mean, probably be a better human being than most of the. I mean, not that great a human being, but based on recent GM hirings, but probably wouldn't do the job so well. But it's fun to sit behind a typewriter or a little microphone on a podcast and speculate, isn't it?
Support for this episode comes from Locker Room, the app that's changing the way we talk sports. Locker Room is a sports fan's dream come true. It's a live audio platform that lets you connect with other fans, experts, and even the athletes themselves. Locker Room makes it easy to start your own conversations. Talk about the latest rumors, takes, news, and teams you care about most. Join massive watch parties for all of your friends to react together in real time as you celebrate a buzzer beater or suffer the agony of a crucial bricked free throw. And if you've got a bunch of supremely spicy takes you'd like to fire off, you're in luck. You can even record the conversations if you want and release them as a podcast. So it's time to start thinking about catchy titles. It's all totally free and available at the iOS App Store right now. So go download it today. Locker Room, changing the way we talk sports.
At any rate, 2019 spring training kicked off without Jed Lowry seeing much action. He was apparently dealing with what was first reported as minor knee pain in early March. While a clear timetable was never really presented, and you're always a little concerned about injuries nagging into the season, the situation seemed innocuous enough. I looked up tons of reports from March of 2019, and a very standard one on March 13th, Brody Van Wagenen told reporters Lowry had begun throwing and hitting. Lowry confirmed that he was hitting, not yet running, but that he was building strength and endurance, and that with 2 weeks until opening day, he was making progress, feeling good. That was his goal, not having any setbacks and just continuing to build strength and progressing every day. One of his last full press conferences or, conversations reports I could find, Lowry said, making a conscious effort to be out there. I'm trying to build relationships, get to know these guys a little bit more, because once I'm back out there, we'll be in the trenches together. So it seemed like a non-serious situation. But Jed Lowry would not be seen in the trenches, as I think most of you may remember, until September of 2019, and his situation would become more and more mysterious, opaque, whatever word you choose to use. It's also telling how interesting a year 2019 was, I think, because it kind of faded into the background a bit. After telling the rest of the NL East to come and get them, in the first half of the 2019 season, the Mets were gotten. The team entered the All-Star break 40 and 50, with speculation that they might need to sell at the trade deadline, most notably pending free agent Zach Wheeler. But the Mets got hot out of the break, going 27 and 10 over the next 37 games, including an incredible 15 out of 16 stretch, comeback victories, excitement, Pete Alonso hitting homers. But they put themselves in the periphery of a pennant race, still well behind the first place Braves, but you know, right behind the second wild card. At one point, only two or three games behind the first wild card and eventual champions that year, the Washington Nationals. So the Mets got tantalizingly close, you know, and again, there was so much drama in that year that it was easy to forget that their biggest offseason free agent acquisition, at least in terms of dollars prior to the season, had still not set foot on a major league field during the season as the team was in an August pennant race. Back in May, Lowry began a rehab assignment in AAA Syracuse, rehabbing what was initially called a sprained left knee capsule. In the middle of that rehab, he strained a hamstring. And from May straight through to October, at most you'd get a weekly or monthly update that from Mickey Callaway or Brody Van Wagenen that Jed Lowry was no closer to returning. Certainly the Mets were never paragons of clarity and forthrightness in the Wilpon era. But at a certain point, the organization seemed to no longer even specify exactly what was wrong with Lowry, which just added to the mystery of the whole thing. It wasn't clear whether it was the knee and the hamstring, re-aggravation of the knee issue, just the hamstring issue. At some point in August, Brody said something along the lines of, I can't give any details beyond the fact that his left side needs to be working in concert with each other. The knee to the hamstring, we want to make sure that the kinetic chain is working together. Just good times. But finally in August, Lowry began another rehab assignment in the minors, made a tour of Brooklyn, St. Lucie, and Syracuse. He went 11 for 40 with two homers, and finally was able to rejoin the team in September when the rosters expanded. But clearly he was not himself, was not suited to play every day. I mean, Robinson Cano was injured for the year. Jeff McNeil had suffered some hamstring problems, but the Mets had to go out and pick up Joe Panic off the waiver wire to play second. Jed Lowry would, over the course of September, have 9 plate appearances as a New York Met, all as a pinch hitter, 8 actual at-bats once he got the double switch sent up, was announced, and didn't get to bat. So 8 plate appearances, 0 for 7, 4 strikeouts, and he did draw a walk. That's right, listeners. On September 16th of 2019, Jed Lowry led off the 9th inning with a walk off of Yairo Diaz in Coors Field in a game the Mets were losing 9-4, and he advanced to third base and was stranded there as the Mets lost 9-4. And that is the most exciting, the most productive Jed Lowry was on the field as a New York Met in his 2-year, $20 million career. So yeah, at the time you think lost season, but okay, he'll be back next year. I mean, how long could knee problems linger? But yeah, then of course the 2020 season, for very unfortunate reasons, got off to a very late start. Even more time to rehab your knee, if we're just looking at it from a purely baseball perspective. But as I'm sure you all know, listeners, the Mets played 60 games only in 2020 due to COVID, and the Mets employed 47 players over those 60 games. Obviously, there were, it was a strange season, injuries, universal DH, needed to use a lot of pitchers, 7-inning doubleheaders, but of course, none of those 47 players were named Jed Lowry. If a season takes place and no one watches it, did it really happen? And if a player signs with a team and no one sees him play, well, In spring training, which of course was, when they had it in February, and then in July when there was a little warm-up camp in Citi Field, Lowry was spotted with a gigantic leg brace that, looked pretty clearly like something that would be hard to play and run in professional ball in. And the Mets grew increasingly cryptic about the nature of the injury. I believe later in July or August there was something about PCL laxity was the official diagnosis, which I'm still not 100% sure what that means. But at any rate, that felt to me like the end of a story. The Mets sign an old veteran player, old veteran player's career ends promptly due to injury seemed pretty cut and dried and not unusual if you're a fan of the New York Mets. Not so dramatically that someone only gets 8 at-bats in the uniform, but, you know, the franchise is littered with stories such as this. Except I look up on opening day, 2021, an opening day that we don't have, and, you know, only the other 28 teams in baseball have, aside from the Mets and the Nationals. And without a Mets game to watch, I'm watching whatever's on ESPN. And there is Jed Lowry, as if the last 2 years never happened, back in an Oakland A's uniform, ripping a line drive up the middle, which was caught by the pitcher, but still. Jed Lowry is the 2021 starting second baseman for a team with playoff aspirations, and yeah, I sincerely began to wonder if the last couple of years had ever happened. Lowry is seemingly healthy. The story is, well, obviously healthy, is playing, I think, pretty much every day so far in this very brief season. And while the A's are off to a very slow 0-4 start, Jed Lowry is 3-for-11 with an RBI. So already more productive than he was over 2 years as a New York Met in these four games in the 2021 season. And I don't want to imply I don't wish him well. I mean, you know, I've never want to wish players, wish ill upon players. And, you know, I don't think players are above a booing every once in a while. I won't be that, not that soft. This is New York. Occasionally some players need to get booed. It's one of the many things I hate about those loathsome Cardinal fans and the whole, oh, we never boo players. Well, you know, maybe you should boo Mark McGwire after he came back as a cheater. Just throwing that out there. But I don't wish Jed Lowry ill, and it's great that he's healthy, but I don't know. I don't think much sums up the Wilpon era more is the futility of that contract and the utter mystery as to, like, you know, I don't even know what he did to get better after 2 years out of baseball. It's still not 100% clear what the injury was and how he's magically better. Just poking around Twitter, which is a very bad thing to do, there just are all sorts of crazy conspiracy theories, you know, that it was a insurance scam by the Wilpons, or, you know, that, you know, just a deal for Brody to get his old client a little pillow landing and they knew he was injured. Crazy stuff, but, you know, that's, I guess, where conspiracies foster when people don't get information. But Jed Lowry is healthy and good for him, I guess, and, you know, the Mets are off to a new era with an owner who can spend $340 million for a more in their prime middle infielder, so hopefully everyone's happy. I usually like to end these unformidables by wrapping up a player's career. And again, this is the first time I've ever done an unformidable where a player is still playing, so I'll just say through his career to this point, Jed Lowry has a 16.9 WAR, according to Baseball Reference. He has a .261 batting average, .335 on base, .413 slugging for a .748 OPS, and .105 OPS plus. After coming off the two best years of his career, a 3.6 WAR in 2017 and a 4 WAR in 2018, didn't even register in Baseball Reference. I guess 8 plate appearances is not enough to register, so I can't even tell you. He doesn't really have advanced stats with the Mets, although in 8 plate appearances he did get a negative 61 OPS plus, so not a productive member of the New York Mets organization. And I'd normally also wouldn't do one of these because you never know what's going to happen in baseball, and Jed Lowry still got some career ahead of him, but I'm going to go out on a limb and say that we're probably never going to see a Jed Lowry in a Met uniform again. That would be something. I guess you never know, though, but if he comes back, it'll probably be worth another unformidable. I sincerely hope he has a good 2021 season, but I hope the Mets have an infinitely better one. Thank you for taking the time to listen to Unformidable. please go to amazonavenue.com for more Mets-related content. You can follow us on Facebook, Twitter, and the Gram. You can find this and all of our amazing pods wherever you get your podcasts. Please subscribe, leave us a review, it really helps. Original music by Bunga. I'm on Twitter at Wolf, WOLFFRR. This show is at Unformidable. Happy belated opening day, friends, and as always, let's go Mets.